the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM. The Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129 presents Just Love, a conversation on the Church's social mission with Monsignor Kevin Sullivan.
Welcome to Just Love. Merry Christmas, and as we look forward to a Happy New Year, thank you for joining us on Just Love during this Christmas week. It's within the octave of Christmas, or the 12 days of Christmas, whatever you want to call it, and I hope that you all had a very Merry Christmas. I'm delighted today that we have one guest here in the studio, Father Eric Andrews, who is the head of the Paulist Fathers, and he's back. He was here in a while ago, and I'm delighted that he's back joining us again. And then I'm even more delighted that we're going to be reaching out to the Holy Land. We're going to be speaking with some people from Bethlehem University, which is a university in the Holy Land that is kind of a joint project of the Christian Brothers and also the Vatican. It goes back to 1973, and we're going to talk a lot more about that. I can think a couple of years ago we had a couple of students from there who were guests on our show. They were doing some work with Catholic Charities USA as interns. So we're going to be speaking with the president of that university and one of the 20-year-old students who is a business major and a marketing minor who's there. So I'm really delighted, and thank you for joining us today on Just Love. We're going to look a little bit back, and I'm delighted that Father Eric Andrews is kind of going to join in our conversation today. And I kind of think when I look back, you know, you always like to look at the bright side of things looking backwards. But I got to tell you, when I look back at this past year, I'm not sure I see the glass as maybe half full. I think there's a lot of things that have been problematic in the past year, and I think we just have to recognize some of that as we go into the new year. I mean, one of the things that I have always been a little bit of contrary about is there's one of these great kind of the Christophers do a lot of communication stuff. And one of their great sayings is that it's better to light one candle than to curse the darkness. Well, periodically, I think that sometimes we're in such a stupor that we don't even realize it's dark. So somebody's got to point out there's darkness there. Otherwise, we don't even think we have to light the candle. And I think, you know, Eric, I think one of the things that is part of this past year is, you know, we kind of get engulfed in things which aren't all that positive, and we got to kind of deal with it as opposed to just burying our heads in the sand.
Yeah. First of all, thanks for having me on, Monsignor. Great. It's great to be back with you here during Christmas week, and maybe Christmas week gives us the opportunity to have a little bit more joy and a little bit more hope than maybe the rest of the year, but I'm exhausted. I mean, I ended the year with a cold, and I don't know whether that was the holiday or whether it was just the whole year in general. So, but yeah, no, I hear you.
Yeah, it's kind of a thing. Now, I got a cold too, so I want sympathy too. You can't get You can't get of the sympathy.
I said it first.
Okay, so you get credit for a little bit more sympathy than I do. You know, one of the things that I've thought about, if I thought about what the theme for the year was, and it is a negative theme, and I kind of use the overall arching title of divisiveness. Mm-hmm. And maybe I kind of push it a little bit, and I think about it as division. I think about it as separation, about things that are torn apart as opposed to coming together. And it just seems to me in so many ways, that's what the history of 2017 has been, this divisiveness where things are torn apart.
Yeah, and I think I do think I was thinking about our president and the way he does government, and also having a television background myself. Some days I just think this is just a reality show extension for the president, and creating conflicts keeps people engaged and keeps people tuned in and gets everyone churned up, whatever side of the equation you're on. And I think that's. I just don't find that very presidential. And if I have a trouble with, that would be the thing I have the trouble with. And we could argue about policies and all that sort of right. thing, but just creating that kind of dynamic day in and day out, it's just too much.
Well, it is. And I think that I think you're on to something. And I guess, now, I don't think we should blame the media for everything, but I do think the media does bear some responsibility for some of the way that we're in the world. And I ask you, you have a background in media. I mean, it seems to me the best thing you do with stupid is to ignore it. You don't fight it. You just kind of ignore it. But we seem to amplify it, and now it becomes a big thing. Let me give you one example, which I thought was one of the dumbest stories in the whole world. The argument whether when the president was playing golf, was that working or was that a vacation? Who cares? But yet, that becomes what the media raises up as something that is supposed to take our attention. And as you said, it's just exhausting.
Yeah. And the news media has to keep feeding itself. You've got 24-hour cable services, and They've got board of directors who are looking at numbers, and so you have to take what's there and spin it up. And Trump comes right out of that world. So as much as he beats up CNN, he knows he's feeding them numbers, and you just wonder where it all ends, you know. And but I would think people, fair-minded people, I always tell I always tell some of the folks in my house, turn off cable news for a night and read a book, because I think you'll wake up in the morning a happier person, you know?
Well, I think that's absolutely right. And I'll share with you something. I mean, I have a number of things, because I am a little bit of a news junkie. I have no problem saying it. I used to look at very often Huffington Post. 3 or 4 years ago, I thought, you know, you got a lot of news, something you didn't get in other places. But I have to tell you, for the past year or so, I really don't look at it as much, because the headlines, in my judgment, were so misleading. They were so one-sided that I didn't want to get caught up into that any more than I'm get caught up into it anyway.
Right, right. And yeah, I hear what you're saying. And then it's trying to find what is the truest news source that is out there that it is going to be objective. And from my experience, no news media is objective, but you need to put them all together and sort out and sift out the truth.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'll just share with our listeners one of the things I did about 6 or 8 months ago. I put on my phone and my iPad, my computer, the app for Associated Press. Mm-hmm. Because I found that they at least tried to give you the information and the facts.
Right.
You know, I'm not saying it's completely unbiased, but it seemed to me to be, I at least understood that 4 people were in a car accident, and it was like 25 degrees and there was ice on the road. And then I can say, you know, it was at least some facts that I got.
Right. And I appreciated those moments throughout 2017 where there were things that just got us off of this whole news cycle. I remember the eclipse being that day where everyone got a, you know, it was like we came together. We could put everything else aside and the wonder and awe of creation doing its thing. And it just lifted, I think, the country up for a moment. You know, one of the jokes that someone, a New Yorker, told me, and this was when the Pope was here, he said, my non-Catholic friend said to me, couldn't the Pope stay longer in New York City so we don't have to listen to Trump? I mean, and that was back, what was that, 2015?
Yep.
So.
Yeah.
As New Yorkers, we're Trump all the time, and I think for we're just weary of our neighbor for a long time now.
We're speaking with Father Eric Andrews, who is the president of the Paulist Fathers. Eric's been a guest on our show before, and I'm delighted that he is with us today. You know, on that whole note, one of the things I've been trying to say, and it's a little bit more kind of theoretical, is I think one of the big mistakes we have made in the past year or two is that we've confused two different ideas and two different topics, politics and society. To a certain sense, politics has now sucked all of the air out of the room, and we think the whole world is about politics. And you know, politicians kind of like that because it inflates their importance. But the reality is that politics is part of society, but it's not the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And that's a real, and I would say I find that to be a problem where I talk about divisiveness. I think that's a problem of both the left and the right. And the way I say it, and probably it's not original, I probably kind of borrowed from somebody and I don't even realize who, but the problem with the left is the left thinks that government is and politics are the solution to everything. The right thinks that government and politics are the problem for everything. And so in either of those, you become obsessed with what should be a relatively small yet critically important part of our whole life. And that's what we get caught up in, is the whole political thing as defining what our life is about.
Right. And I think along those lines, I think traditionally in American politics, the left and the right could negotiate around those things. They could bring those to the table and come to some kind of a compromise or some kind of a negotiated finality of things, working together to balance those two views. Now there's just none of that. And that's really dangerous.
It is absolutely dangerous. And I think we can use two examples from my point of view, is that when you get a major overhaul of the tax code, which has no votes from the Democrats, well, that's not a good way to make policy.
And no deliberation either.
Right. And then when you have the healthcare thing that the Democrats did 4, 5, 6 years ago, you didn't have any participation by the Republicans.
Right.
And so you have a situation in which people, all they want to do is win, and they don't want to come to what I say is kind of the better answer. They just want to get their answer through.
So my fear is every political cycle, we throw out the old, we completely replace it, and we're doing this kind of, you know, it's schizophrenic. You just, you know. So, I mean, I think the next cycle, and I'm looking to those millennials down the line who are starting to get involved in politics, I think they're gonna go a whole different way, and we're going to see a whole different political landscape 10, 15 years from now, throwing out this kind of confrontational model to something that my hope would be for the future.
So say a little bit more about that, because, I mean, for many people, when they say the word millennials, there are all these kind of negative connotations, et cetera, from some. But I think you're absolutely right. There is something there that needs to shape the future of our society. What do you see there?
Well, I see with millennials a tremendous promise. I just know from our parish, St. Paul the Apostle, which is the neighbor to the Cathedral Parish here in New York City, lots of young professionals, and they're wanting to find meaning in work. It's not about the big paychecks or the big rewards as much as finding meaning. And a lot of young professionals are not hanging around for the big paycheck anymore. They want to, if it doesn't have any kind of, it's not going to move the, you know, make the world a better place, shall we say. So I do see the care for the poor, the care for the need for health care universally. I could see universal health care coming down the line in 10, 15 years as a reaction to all that's going on. And, you know, the biggest beef I have with both parties is that no one's on the side of the poor. That we talk about jobs, 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 middle class, or the rich, or whatever. No one is speaking about the poor. And I think we ignore the poor at our own spiritual peril. And that's why I really appreciate the work of Catholic Charities. My home county up in Dutchess County, if it weren't for Catholic Charities, I don't know how the immigrants, the migrants would get taken care of. So this is a huge issue, and no one wants to deal with the poor. Our mayor in the city makes noises, it gets worse, the situation. And
And again, what I say to your point, I was speaking with Father Eric Cruz, who's the president of the Paulist Fathers, and what you just said about that issue with regard to the poor, I understand issues of discrimination. I understand issues of putting forth human rights. But as I've said so many times before, we spent more time discussing who was going to use which bathroom in the past 2 years than we did were kids going to get an education in schools and be able to move forward in their lives and to be support themselves and their families. It's just a misplaced priority, because that's not such a sexy issue, the issue of education, making sure kids can read, making sure they can graduate, making sure they can get into college or getting a trade where they can do. There was so little time spent on that compared with some of those other, you know, hot button issues that we kind of drew a wedge between people.
Yeah. And I just think young adults, I have a different wavelength on these things than maybe the baby boomer generation, which is currently in power. So, and it's not a bad thing; it's just a different thing. So, that's exciting to keep an eye on.
So let's move a little bit more into kind of a little bit of the religious sphere. And again, if we look globally, you know, I'm not sure we did so good in terms of getting people together, where we had situations in which we're even blowing up churches now, we're blowing up mosques, and even religious people who are praying to God seemingly using God to kill one another.
The violence, a lot of the violence around the world is people disagreeing about the nature of God, and it makes no sense.
It really does. So tell us a little bit about what this is not a Pollyanna question, but your community, which is one of the more vibrant communities around, which has its mission as trying to make sure the gospel is communicated. So you're the head of this group. So how come we're not, how come you're not doing a better job? How come you haven't communicated the gospel, and how come we're not being more Christian?
Well, we take full responsibility for the lack of.
Okay.
So it was just that said.
All right.
We're all trying to wrap our heads around why people are not going to church on Sunday,
right.
And especially young adults. And how do we reach out to those people who say that they're non-affiliated? They're spiritual, right. But not religious. And I think one of the things we are becoming attuned to is the authenticity of the church and being able to relate on a real level as to what the needs are and where people are at. And is the church interested? I know the Pope wants to have, and this is something exciting for the future, the next synod on young adults. And I do think there's an ear that needs to be lent to that generation, and to all. I think we're still the after effects of the sex abuse crisis. We see it keep reverberating. I think just the general tone of religious leaders, whatever they are, we all get painted with a broad brush. Is Christianity about joy of the gospel, or is it about you can't do this and you can't do that? So I think we're trying to, you know, like all of us are trying to be good ambassadors for what the church and the joy of the gospel is and how do we live it. And so people are paying attention and trying to, you know, to find answers for this. But I think the biggest answer is for each one of us in terms of our own personal authenticity about the gospel.
When I think about that issue, I either think about it locally or I think about it universally. And it seems to me that there's always a tendency, I think, those of us in the United States to kind of focus on what's going on in the United States. I think it's one of those burdens or one of those temptations we have being such an economic engine, being a military engine, that you kind of think the whole world is in the United States. And somebody one day told me the whole world is not the United States.
Yeah.
There's a big world out there. And if you look at some of the flourishing of Christianity in Africa, Asia, South America, well, that's an entirely different story,
yeah,
than what you and I kind of walk through each day and what we experience each,
yeah,
day.
Yeah, no, that's the blessing. The church is growing exponentially in Africa and South America, et cetera, Asia. And I think that is the future. It's the Southern Hemisphere. What does it mean for those of us back in the West where it all began? I think bishops and others are trying to wrap their head around that and at this point don't have a good answer.
I think that's probably right. I mean, I think that is right. But that goes back to kind of what I said about the Christophers early on.
Mm-hmm.
Let's begin by saying we don't have the answer. And maybe, you know, that's what's, we need to recognize that, and with a little bit of humility, kind of say, I don't know.
Yeah.
And we just got to try to.
And that's Pope Francis's great gift. He's a listener.
Yeah.
He's happy to listen. He doesn't care if you're saying things that might upset him. He wants to hear it all. And I think that's the educator, Jesuit in him. And I think that scares other people in power in the church, because if you listen, does that mean you're agreeing? But I do think that's the stance that's lacking. Maybe all the topics we're talking about, we're not listening to each other. If you walk in someone else's shoes for a few minutes, you begin to understand why he or she has that differing issue. Can we humanize this experience? And that does make a difference for people.
We're speaking with Father Eric Andrews, who is the president of the Paulus. I think we'll take a little break now, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation on Just Love. And by the way, you can follow me on Just Love blog, and you can also follow me on Twitter at MSGRK Sullivan. And you can learn a little bit more about some of the things we talk about here on Just Love. And so a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year as we kind of move out of the old year. And we're speaking about some of the things during the past year that maybe weren't so uplifting, but if we don't speak about those things, we're not going to be able to deal with them. We're not going to be able to move forward. So join us when we come back in just a moment on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is our weekly conversation in which we look at what's going on in the world through our perspective of our Catholic wisdom, our Catholic values, and we try to make a little bit of sense of it, or maybe make it a little bit less nonsensical to try to kind of get a better perspective of what's going on. We're speaking with Father Eric Andrews, who's the president of the Paulist Fathers, who's one of their main missions is to kind of communicate the gospel in an effective way so that the good news of Jesus Christ is more present in people's lives. Eric, thank you again for taking the time to be with us in your compromised state of having a cold there. Did you take medicine yet?
I did. I called the doctor on Christmas Eve because I needed to work. So
okay.
And he took care of me. Thanks.
So what'd you preach on Christmas Day?
Oh, golly, what did I? This is all the blur. I talked about
Jesus, maybe?
I did.
Good. That's good.
I talked
good.
About
like that.
That. Christmas homilies are not the easiest things to preach. You'd think they'd be off the top of your head. I did talk about, trying to identify with the poverty of Mary and Joseph in the manger. And I joked about how at our mother house, we didn't have heat and hot water. So that was our way of trying to identify with the poor. But it was basically the reminder, and maybe this tax thing got in my head, but the Messiah doesn't come trickling down. He comes from the bottom up, through the manger and through the simplest of places. Or no one would look for the Messiah to come. And I just thought that was a potent metaphor to remind people of this particular Christmas.
Yeah, I like it.
How about you? What did you say?
Well, I basically, in light of my kind of being negative on what's going on in the whole world, that there's a lot of evil, I just did the basic point to say, listen, when we use the phrase, I'm only being human, what do we usually mean?
I'm only human. Well, I make mistakes. I'm a sinner, whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But what Jesus says is, I'm only human, and I'm capable of the divine.
Mm.
That the Word becoming flesh says that this humanity is capable of incredible good.
Mm-hmm.
It's incapable of good. So that what our Christian belief says is, I'm only human means I can have God within me.
Right.
And I can do tremendous amount of good, that it's not only about making mistakes, screwing up, because that's what happens all the time.
Yeah.
And so we just need to see Christmas as a call for our humanity to let its goodness out. So that was my little thing.
Excellent. I love it.
Yeah. So anyway, so that was our little thing. So you got any new projects that the Paulists are working on next year?
2018 is going to be a great year. The Paulist Press, as America's oldest Catholic publisher.
Yay!
Is coming out with a new edition of what's called, people in the biz, as we say, would know, the Jerome Biblical Commentary, this
right.
giant book
right.
that helped preachers and biblical scholars. Well, we're coming out with the Paulist Biblical Commentary, which is geared towards understanding this. It's geared to preachers, basically, and people are trying to understand the Gospels and the whole Bible on a more accessible level. So it's a groundbreaking work, and I know it's going to be a great gift, and hopefully it'll help the preachers. Maybe a gift for your parish pastor who needs some help with his preaching. This could be a great 2018 Christmas gift.
When's it coming out?
In the fall.
Okay.
So we'll look for that.
So I want to lobby you for two things.
Yes,
okay, two things. One.
Yes, one.
Would you at least print it in a size font that I can read it?
Okay.
Because the Jerome Biblical Commentary,
oh my
it
heavens.
Is so...
It's a phone book. I know.
But no, I don't care that it's big, but the print is so small that you can't read it. I mean, anyway, so that's my second. The other thing is it going to be, can you buy it online?
That's a very good question. I'll have to get back to you on that.
Because, let me tell you, this is my own thing. There are very few good Catholic commentaries online.
Yeah.
There are many Protestant ones.
Mm-hmm.
And again, for our listeners, most good, most biblical scholarship this day is ecumenical.
Right.
So it's not, you know, a Catholic apology for Catholic doctrine and Protestant. But there sometimes is a little bit of difference because, and you want to have a variety there. So that's why I think it is important that there are Catholic commentaries, not exclusively, but that there are.
And the scholarship on this is awesome. I mean, from biblical scholars all around the country. And
good.
And the second thing is that we have a movie coming out, Paulist Productions, called The Dating Project. And it's about the struggle for young adults to just date.
Oh, I thought it was about the Paulist fathers needing to date. No.
No.
Oh, no, okay.
We're not there yet.
Okay, fine.
That's Vatican III or IV,
okay,
I think.
Okay, fine. Okay.
But no, this is a great movie, I think, for college students and for young adults who are just struggling with the traditional model of dating. People are so insecure that they're going to be rejected. They don't go out on regular dates.
Well.
So this is a great movie to kind of...
That's great, because I've had a couple of guests on the show here over the past few years, and I think we're now up to, you know, probably know the number better than I. Is it 25%, 33% of marriages are now through one of those dating sites, eHarmony or Catholic Singles or stuff like that? And, you know, at first I said it was a little weird, but then I said, wait a minute. I mean, you know, it's probably the equivalent of a bar. I mean, you know, it's just a different medium to meet people.
And this came to us because there's a professor at Boston College, and she realized that kids didn't know how to just ask someone out on a simple date. And so she gives talks, lectures on this at BC, the biggest lecture hall in the whole darn university, and packs it out the door. So this is obviously a topic. Well, having been a campus minister, I just know... You talk about that subject, everyone shows up.
Oh, that's great. That
so
is
that'll be good.
That is good.
We're excited.
You know what? Suppose we now go to Bethlehem.
Let's
and
go.
And we're going to speak with some people at Bethlehem University. I'm going to let them tell us a little bit more about the university. The first person we're going to speak with is Brother Peter Bray, who, in our typical Catholic way, he's kind of the head of the university, but they can't call him the chancellor because they make a bishop kind of the chancellor of the university. But he's the boss there. He's the president of Bethlehem University. Brother Peter Bray, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us this Christmas week.
You're welcome. It's good to be here.
Great. And here, so that our listeners make sure they know it, here means Bethlehem, a few miles south of Jerusalem, right?
That's right. Yes, in Palestine. Mm-hmm.
For our listeners, just set the geography a little bit for them. How far south of Jerusalem is Bethlehem?
Oh, about 7 kilometers. Well, it's about 6 miles, I suppose, yes.
So
but we have a wall separating us from Jerusalem.
Yeah, so it's very, very near.
Yes.
But yet, as you mentioned, there's a wall there, which I guess, you correct me if I'm wrong, which on occasion becomes a very, very difficult obstacle in getting back and forth.
Well, yes, we have 46% of our students come from East Jerusalem, so they have to come through the wall each day. Often that is a cause of them being late if they are stopped at the checkpoint coming through, or if the military stop the bus and check their IDs. So yeah, it is a major problem. But the other side is that we can't take Palestinians from Bethlehem into Jerusalem. And so, you know, as the only Catholic university in Palestine, in the Holy Land, in Bethlehem, in near Jerusalem, you know, even in the holy days, we can't take a group of our students from Bethlehem into Jerusalem or up to the Galilee.
That makes it really, really difficult, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. It does, yes. Yeah.
So tell our listeners, how did you get involved? I mean, you're from New Zealand.
That's right.
Did you get lost? Is that how you wound up in Bethlehem?
No, that wasn't it at
okay.
all. I did my doctorate in leadership at University of San Diego, and then I taught in a program, in a summer program in the States for about 12 years. And one of the brothers who organized it, this was in university in Chicago, Philadelphia and San Francisco. And one of the brothers who organized it back in the early part of the century eventually got into our general council in Rome. And unfortunately, my predecessor, Brother Dan Casey, was appointed in 2006, and then 2007 he was diagnosed with cancer, and he died in 2008. And so the General Council in Rome were confronted with finding a new Vice-Chancellor here, and Bob had this strange idea that because I could talk about leadership, I might be able to do something. And so in May of 2008, I was invited to come here from New Zealand.
And so you've been there now for just about 10 years?
Yes, it's my 10th year.
You like it?
I find it one of the most satisfying positions I've ever had. It's certainly the most difficult job I've ever had in terms of the complexity of the situation we're in all sorts of ways, the unpredictability of when things are going to come unstuck, and then, as I was mentioning before, the severe restrictions that the Israeli military put on us. But I've never been in a place where it is so obvious that what we are doing is worthwhile. You know, I'm interviewing a few students now on camera because I'm going down to Australia and New Zealand and doing presentations down there. And I want to take clips of students and just listening to them and just having been here almost 10 years to watch what I'd say timid, sort of frightened little secondary school students come in and just watch them grow and blossom into, you know, really very confident, articulate, courageous young people. You know, when I see that and I'm engaged with students for whom that is happening, you know, you can put up with all that other stuff that is involved in being here. So, yeah, it's incredibly satisfying. Enjoying, probably because of that, but satisfying, I'd say, very satisfying.
So you've been there now for almost a decade.
Mm-hmm.
What changes have you noticed from when you first got there and now?
Well, my sense is that it's getting more difficult for Palestinians. The restrictions are being applied more harshly. And I'd say that, you know, in East Jerusalem, there's a systematic movement of Israelis into the East Jerusalem and driving Palestinians out. And I think, you know, if I could just talk about one student, Almataz from a little village in Wallagee, you know, he lives in a village that the Israelis claim is disputed land, and His house was demolished by the Israeli military, and then his friends and family rebuilt it. And I was talking to him briefly, shortly after it had been demolished for the second time. And he said to me, you know, they've taken my house, they've taken my land, they've taken my freedom, but they can't take my education. And I think it's sort of that resilience, determination, courage that, you know, I just am becoming more and more aware of among the students. And, you know, the situation as we have it at present, after your president talked about Jerusalem as being the place where he's going to put the embassy, I think has caused an unsettling and uncertainty among not only our students but Palestinians here. But at the same time, I'd say there's a certain charade that has been demolished, and that you know, there's an honesty about the role that the United States can play here now, given the way in which they've obviously sided with the Israelis in nominating Jerusalem, which is an international city under international law, as the capital and the place where their embassy is going to go. But I'd say that one of the things that has become clear to me is the importance, as Elmet has said, the importance that is attached to education. I sense that students are more conscious of that, and because Israel controls the economy here, the unemployment is an issue. And one of the ways that we are trying to address that is through an incubator, Bethlehem Business Incubator, which is a way of helping young people, you know, create their own businesses and their own way of making a living here.
So we're speaking with the president of Bethlehem University, Brother Peter Bray, who's been there for just about a decade now. How big is the university?
Sorry?
How big is the university?
It's about 3,200 students. It's one of the smaller universities in Palestine, but we're on a very restricted site, and we are, as a Catholic university, we are unashamedly Catholic, and we're trying to support Christians here, but we're certainly open to Muslim students who come, and some 74% of our, or 76% of our students are Muslim. And that's, you know, in a country where less than 2% are Christian, it's a question I'm often asked, you know, what's an unashamedly Catholic university doing in a country like Palestine where there are less than 2% Christian? And my response is, well, if we're focusing on the Christians, if you go back 2,000 years to when Jesus was walking these lands, there were no Christians here at all then. So what was he trying to do? And I think if you go to St. John's Gospel, chapter 10, verse 10, you'll find that he said that I have come. Why? I have come that they may have life, life in all its fullness. So that's what Jesus was on about. He wasn't trying to make Christians. He was trying to enable people to live life as fully as they could. And I would say that's definitely what Bethlehem University is trying to do. Whether they be Christian or Muslim or no faith at all, we're trying to create an atmosphere here, to develop an environment, to provide opportunities for our students to you know, gain the skills, to develop the attitudes, and the values that is going to enable them to live life as fully as they can, despite the occupation, despite the restrictions, despite the hassles that so many of them endure.
Now, are there any Jewish students in the university?
No. Under Israeli law, Israelis are not allowed to come into the West Bank, so we're not allowed to have them here.
But there are some settlements in the West Bank, aren't there?
Oh, that's a different question.
Okay.
You know, the settlements are ways in which Israel is occupying the West Bank.
Right.
And I think, I spoke to a group of lawyers in Sydney some time ago, and I was saying to them that under Israeli law, Israel is not allowed into Palestine. But if they do come in and start up an outpost, which develops into a settlement, under Israeli law, the Israeli military is bound to protect them, just seems a little odd.
Right. So what if there was something that people should know and appreciate about Bethlehem University, what would that be? What would that kind of fact or reality be that it would be nice if people knew more about?
So many things. Well, if I can take it just briefly this
sure.
way. One of my real concerns is the unpredictability of our students' lives. Like I mentioned, 46% of our students come from East Jerusalem, and they come. Most of them come on a bus, or a whole series of buses, of course. Now, when they leave to come to Bethlehem University, they don't know whether they're going to get here. They don't know whether the bus is going to be stopped once, twice, maybe even three times by Israeli military. They don't know whether they're going to be interrogated. They don't know whether they're going to have a gun put in their face. They don't know whether they're going to get here on time or be arrested. And that sort of unpredictability and uncertainty leads to stress and anxiety, and in some cases to a dysfunctional way of operating. So the question I've been asking in the last few years is, how can Bethlehem University help students adjust to that or deal with that? And I think there are three things we're seeking to do. Firstly, when students step onto our campus, I want them to know that they are safe here, that nobody's going to arrest them here, nobody's going to put a gun in their face here, nobody's going to interrogate them while they're on campus. The second thing is that, you know, we're a La Salleian school following in the footsteps of Jean-Baptiste de La Salle, and he talked about the importance of relationships, and I've adapted one of his sayings, and I talk to faculty and staff here that they need to be brothers and sisters to one another, and then older brothers and sisters to the young people entrusted to us. So I want our students, when they step onto campus, to know that the adults who are here are looking out for them, who are their older brothers and sisters. So I want them to know that they're cared for. And then the third thing is that I want them to know they're stepping into a predictable environment. When they step onto campus, they know that there are classes at certain times, that there are expectations of them in classes, there are exams at certain times, there are assignments that have to get in. And so they're not having to worry about, you know, what's coming up. It's a predictable environment. So, you know, a safe environment, a caring environment, a predictable environment. And I'm hoping out of that, that there'll be peaceful hearts and peaceful minds and therefore peaceful peoples. And so what we are trying to create here is an oasis of peace in the midst of this chaotic environment that most of our students come from. So I think that's an important part of what we are trying to do.
Hey, thank you so much. Thank you, Brother Peter Bray, most importantly for the work that you're doing there, the time you're spending there, trying to create that safe, that predictable, that caring environment. Thank you for doing that, and thanks for being a guest on Just Love today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
We're going to take a break now, and when we come back, we're going to speak with one of the students from the university there. We're going to speak with Lean Hadway, and we're going to speak about her experience at Bethlehem University. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is our weekly conversation about the church in the world, where we reflect upon what's going on in the world through our Catholic wisdom. Join us when we come back in just a moment on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is our weekly conversation about the church and the world. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. We're going to continue our conversation about Bethlehem University. And if there's anybody listening who doesn't know the importance of Bethlehem, that's where Jesus was born. And a little bit of our pop quiz. Why was he born in Bethlehem? Father Eric Andrews, why was he born in Bethlehem?
That's the city of David.
His ancestors
were from there. So there you go. Just like the Bible said.
Okay. I'm delighted with us now, a business major, a student ambassador, Lean Hardway. Thank you, Lean, for being with us.
You're more than welcome. Hi.
Hi. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. So my main question to you is,
yes,
who's your favorite American basketball player?
Oh man, that's a hard question. I wouldn't say I really have a favorite.
Okay, because you're a basketball player, aren't you?
I am, but I don't really keep up much with the basketball teams in America.
Okay, but you're the best basketball player on your team, right?
I try to be.
Okay.
But to answer your question, I would say Stephen Carey.
Okay.
He's amazing.
That's good. I think
that's a favorite.
I think that's a good pick. Anyway, hey, thanks for taking the time to be with us today.
Of course, yes.
So tell us a little bit. So you're a business major and a marketing minor. So what do you want to do after you graduate?
Well, a dream of mine would be to open up my own business in our small town in Palestine. I live in Beit Jala specifically. It's a small town right beside Bethlehem. I dream of opening up my own business here. Don't really know what exactly, but that's a dream of mine. If that doesn't work, I've always wanted to, there's always my dad's business, so I could, do that. But I would love to get my master's degree after graduating, for sure.
Can you get your master's degree at Bethlehem University?
There are specific master's programs, but not the ones that I want specifically.
So which ones do you want?
I would like to go into human resources management for a master's degree. That's okay. A thought so far. So
okay. Now, Father Eric Andrews, who's here with us, he went to New York University. So do they have a degree there?
Sure. They've got everything. they'd be happy to have you.
That's amazing. Thank you.
I'll make some calls.
I would not mind. I would not mind.
No.
Well, what's your dad's business?
My dad owns a couple of buildings where, first of all, he's an architect. He's an engineer here. He does that for freelancing. But then he has his own business where he rents out apartments and offices for people. And he's opening up an investment company soon. We're still working on that.
Well, Lean, I think it's always important that people kind of try to build up the communities where they are. So you're wanting to open a business there is very good and very necessary. I will happen to mention, however, we do have some real estate in New York that people get involved in, and we have a little bit of financial investing in New York. So if something, we always like people to come from other places to New York, but I'm encouraging you to stay in the Bethlehem area. But I just wanted to let you know there are other options out there.
I definitely know there are other options, but just like you said, people, we have to stay where we are sometimes and just sort of help our community develop.
Right.
Absolutely. But that's a great offer.
So, Lean, tell me about Bethlehem University. Did you like going there? How'd you decide to go there?
Well, originally I went to an American school in Bethlehem.
Okay.
So going up, I've always wanted to study at an American university, probably in America. But then when I grew up, I noticed that it was, first of all, way too expensive. And I've always wanted to be a business major. It was always something that I liked. So when I grew up and I was about to graduate, everyone was like, Bethlehem University has one of the best business programs or, faculty in almost all of Palestine. So that kind of made it a very tempting and first choice for me. So that's what made me go to it. I wasn't very encouraged at first because going to American school sort of put me away from my own culture, the Arab culture around me. I was mostly surrounded by American teachers and American students. So I was not very encouraged. But then later on, I got opened up to many different things at the university, and right now I'm loving it.
That's great. And you're teaching other people English, aren't you?
Yes. Kids at my former school, kids who are recently coming into the school, their parents, were asking about students that graduated and any of who could tutor, because kids are still new at the school. So I stepped up and was like, yes, I'm willing to. So.
At the university, at Bethlehem University, in what language are the classes taught?
Most of the classes are taught in English, actually. Only a few classes are taught in Arabic, most specifically the university requirements. You know, it might be art, cinema, history, those kind of things are in Arabic, but almost everything else is in English.
What was your favorite class?
Favorite class? Oh, dang it. I would say a consumer behavior course that I took this semester.
They kind of call that marketing, don't they?
In a way, yeah, you sort of see how people think, what goes through their head when they buy stuff, that kind of stuff, psychology.
And so you know where to put it on the shelves, and you know how to market it, right?
Yeah, trying, getting there.
Good, good. Hey, Lene, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us, and I certainly wish you the best. And what year are you in the university?
I am in my third year, actually.
Okay, so you'll graduate in another year and a half.
Yes.
Okay. Lene, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us, and the best of luck in your career, and I hope you get to open your own business right outside of Bethlehem.
Thank you so much. That
means
a lot. Thank you.
Lene Hadway, who is a business major, student ambassador, a junior at Bethlehem University, and she's moving ahead and looking to maybe open her own business right outside of Jerusalem. So, Eric, any final thoughts you have for our listeners?
Well, I, as the new year begins or about to begin, I just a word of hope to all your listeners out there that the light that's inside of them may shine forth in this new year, and not to get overcome by the darkness.
Well, I think that is good, and my word to pick up on that would be that, listen, we can all disagree, we can have very, very different opinions, they can be passionate, but if we could express them civilly to each other without unnecessary anger, that seems to me to go a long way to helping us to engage in dialogue. And you know, I do see some examples of people. And I saw the other night, I saw a replay of what Pink did when she talked to her daughter at, I think it was the Grammys or one of those things. She was so passionate, but there was a civility to it. There was a strength to it that I think we can all learn from people who can do that in a way which is true to their principles, but not denigrating other people. Hey, a very happy new year to all of you. Thanks for being with us on Just Love. This is the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Listening to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.